morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. We're on Facebook Live, Harry? All right, we're joining on Facebook Live and on WNHH Radio. And good morning to New Haven Mayor Tony Harf.
Good morning.
Here on this cool morning, giving us a little hint of autumn.
I know. We were saying that, actually, Lawrence was saying that as long as it's not even August yet, as far as he's concerned, it's still summer.
All right. But I'll still take a couple of days of cool nights to sleep and all that, no AC.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Long sleeve shirt for the day. That was
kind
of fun.
Yeah, and it's great for the grass, right?
Yeah. I'll take it. And Mayor Harf is here in the studio for our regular Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in New Haven. So join the conversation by posting a question on the New Haven Independent Facebook Live page or calling us at 203-872-7356. 203-872-7356. Today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Birch and Moses in Devlin, PC, and from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway, and thanks, Bertram, and thanks, Mayor Harf, for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
You were out and around all weekend, as usual.
Oh, yeah.
What's your day off?
None. No days off for the mayor, what can I tell you?
Okay. Don't think I'd... Okay. I'm glad it's not me who has the day off. I saw you last night working, Sunday night, in Fairhaven.
Yeah.
Where there was a rally. I felt it was one of those defining New Haven moments about how our community does stand out, what we stand for. It was a vigil. A couple hundred people showed out in Fairhaven next to Iglesia Del Diaz Church on East Pearl Street. Because there's a woman there who actually is from Norwalk, not New Haven.
Right.
It was a 24-year American worker named Nuri Chavarria. Did I say that right?
I think so.
Okay. Anyway, she was being deported. And instead of getting on a plane, she became the first person to make use of New Haven's Sanctuary Church Network.
Right.
She's living in the church for now. She's become somewhat of a national story.
Mm.
There are 13 in the country, people living in sanctuary churches. This is the one that got an Inside Edition last weekend, got on MSNBC, CNN. I think there's going to be a big program on it on NBC, national. Well, why do you think this is touching such a nerve?
Well, you know, we heard the rhetoric during the election, and, you know, certainly President Trump during the election was saying that, you know, we're going to get all of the undocumented criminals out of America, and this is just to remove criminals, people who are preying upon Americans, these awful people. And then, as it turns out, most of these people are people who've never committed a crime, have raised their children here. Most of their children are American citizens. They work, they pay taxes, they live quiet lives. And 24 years later, as in the case of Nuri, she's going to be deported.
Deportations are up about 40%, and she's a classic case of how under President Obama there was a policy. He did increase deportations, but he did say that if someone isn't beating somebody up, committing crimes, dealing drugs, being in a gang, we're not going to focus on that. We have 10 million more people like that in the country. We're not throwing them out there here. So every year she would go and get a stay.
Right.
And now under the new policy, she is getting removed. And I felt last night at this rally, so it was a vigil, you spoke. She was there, and she was supposed to stay inside the church, but she was moved and came out because people were singing for her and chanting. It was a lovely moment. And I really felt like you felt it. Like, I noticed, I've watched you a long time, and I feel like this issue has grabbed you. And tell me if I'm wrong. I don't want to exaggerate. But when you were talking last night about how outraged you were to live in a country where a person like this who works hard, and you know very few people who are indigenous to America in the first place, she's paying taxes, raising kids, and you started speaking about the impact of children. She has four. She's a single mom. She cleans homes. She's been working for 24 years. And you talked about the impact on kids. You talked about resilience, although they have done research on a resiliency gene. But you talked about impact of kids. No, it's actually kind of interesting. We're two kids growing up in the same circumstances that are horrible.
Mm-hmm.
One of them will make it and one won't.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, your point was very well taken about when the mother is taken away, what is the cost to those children? I mean, was this just another speech for you, or
no? It wasn't another speech. You've got to meet her little girl. Her little girl's name is Haley. And she is bright and bubbly and full of life, full of ideas, wants to learn things, wants to have fun, and very outgoing, lovely young lady. And to think that her mother, who helped to raise her to the point that she is, she's a fully American child. She may speak Spanish, I don't know, but she's just like any quintessential American that you would imagine. And here she is, never having been in her life in her mother's country of origin, having to either be taken there herself to a very impoverished situation, or losing her mother for 10 years. I mean, that's got to strike at your heart chord.
You know, the people talk to us about cost. I know this isn't mostly about money, but people say, what about cost? Most undocumented workers pay taxes. And what's going to happen with the Department of Children and Family Services? What's going to happen to these kids? One of them is grown, oh, they have cerebral palsy. What happens to these kids if this woman gets taken away? So she's become this compelling symbol. You sat and talked to her, Mayor Harp. What's she like, Lurie, Sharia, the woman who's living there?
She's a really decent, nice human being. She's quiet. She's very introspective, but has a real sweet spirit. Very, very lovely person.
So you could tell when she came out last night how moved she was by people speaking up for her. Wonder what it's like to be from another country, clean houses for a living, being a single mom. All of a sudden, you're this symbol. She's really become a symbol of the resistance to President Trump's immigration policies. I mean, the people are helping her in New Haven because we care about this issue in New Haven. Mm-hmm. We're also very aware of the potency of her story. A single mom who cleans houses 24 years, has all these kids, has done nothing wrong while she's in the country. They realize how compelling an answer that is to people who want all the immigrants deported. So I wonder how that bears on her individually.
I don't know that she realizes the degree to which she's become a symbol.
Well, but she spent a couple hours on Saturday with national NBC News crew, Inside Edition. She's been on TV. But you think she's kind of secluded in this church? She's kind of not aware?
I think that, you know, when you talk to reporters and you're talking just to them, you don't really understand the impact.
10 million people are watching you.
That 10 million people are watching you. You know, I don't think that she probably in retrospect will understand the impact that she's had on so many people, but I don't think that it's something that has, at least it's my sense that it hasn't really occurred to her at this particular point in time.
Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen. So what's the end game? Do you see her living there for weeks or months or?
You know, I'm hoping that our congresspeople will do something. I know that her attorneys are filing for some form of asylum. I'm not a technical person, so I don't exactly know the technical name for it. And I know that Senator Blumenthal is also trying to do something to get her approved and her deportation waived.
You got your police force, obviously, has been working closely with the immigrant rights community, immigrant community here. Do you see any kind of clash with ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement Service, that does these raids? Now, they have a policy. They don't go into churches. Do you think they're keeping an eye out the way they did 10 years ago and we did the ID card and they did raids? Do you think they're going to retaliate against us? Do you think we might start showing up in the list that they wanted to fund as sanctuary cities?
No, I don't. I actually, and I've listened to Nuri's lawyer, and he basically says that they're decent people. They're just following the law, and that I don't think that they're waiting to stage any kind of raids. I really don't. Unless the word comes from higher than the local offices, the local officers are I've been told, are really decent and helpful.
I read the emails. They were released through the Immigration Act from 10 years ago, and they wanted to retaliate us against it for the ID card. They were writing very nasty things about New Haven and seeing the government and everybody else as lawbreakers, and they were standing on the outside of rallies and really it got macho, you know, so like we're going to show them back.
So maybe there's some different people there now.
Always believing the best in human nature, Mary Tony Harbin. That's a good way to live. And she's living here on WNHH's Mayor Monday show in Dateline New Haven, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Guess who's on the phone?
I'm three-letter name, right?
Begins with?
A B.
All right, Bob, you're on with Mayor Harp. How you doing?
Hey, Paul and Mayor Harp, how are you today?
Good. It's good to hear your
voice.
How
are you?
It's always good to hear you guys. I have a comment and then a few questions. My comment is, Mayor, I agree with you about the Norwalk mother, who is, as I call it, held up at this church. You know, there's, you know, the government, ICE looks at her as a fugitive. The rest of us look at it as she hasn't done anything wrong. You know, why can't she live her life in this country?
You know, did you wonder why Norwalk, the Norwalk mayor, was there last night, but Norwalk didn't have a place for her? She lives in Norwalk, I guess, because New Haven's a special kind of community. We have more of an immigrants' rights activist community because they have plenty of Latino immigrants in Norwalk.
And I think her lawyers are here too, so, and I think they're affiliated with Yale's immigration clinic.
Gotcha.
So that might be another reason.
So sorry to interrupt you, Bob. What's your question for Mayor Harp?
So how is this church chosen to be the sanctuary church for her?
You know, I think there are a number of churches. When I think months ago, at least 6 months ago, churches and synagogues and mosques, the leaders of which came together and tried to identify the appropriate churches that would be willing to take this on. And I believe that there are several in the greater New Haven area. And this one was the one that could do it at that particular time.
And then there's the First and Summerfield Church is also in the network, which is at College Street and Elm and Michigan, Israel,
yep.
And Hamden.
Mm-hmm.
So the network's in place. It's reminiscent, they call it like the Underground Railroad, including the renamed Underground Railroad from the 80s with Central American migrants when they're fleeing the wars that the U.S. was waging in El Salvador and areas nearby. So, Bob, did you have any other questions for Mayor Harp?
Yeah, I actually did, and I consider it kind of like another hot topic or hot button issue in New Haven, and that's the recent shootings, including the fatal shooting last week of the 14-year-old boy. Mayor Harp, saw on the TV, read online about the Alder Clyburn and State Rep Porter saying the shooting on Saturday on Shelton and Ivy may have not have happened if there were walking beats or maybe more patrol cars in that area. What do you have to say to that? Do you think we need the National Guard, the state police? I don't know. We've had two recent shootings, another one yesterday. Could they all be connected?
I believe that they're not connected, according to what the police have said to me, that they're not. I think that a couple of things. I think right around the time there was that shooting occurred, I was told that there was a shift change, and so there weren't as many people there at that particular time. And so we've got to really look at shift changes and what happens. I contacted Chief Generoso to say to him that we've got to have heavy police presence in Newhallville because, for whatever reason, Newhallville is hot right now. In spite of the really wonderful people that live there, the great young people that are there, for some reason there's a problem that has been focused on that particular neighborhood. And so what he said to me was that they have done that already. We have something that we do in the summertime called SAVVY. It usually starts in August. They're speeding.
Can you spell the acronym?
S-A-V-I.
Like, I forget what it stands for.
Yeah, but it is.
It's bureaucratic,
yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's federal overtime money.
It's federal overtime money that we'll be able to get. We're going to concentrate it in Newhallville and the other hot spots around the city. You know, it's a tough time for that community. What I'm saying to the community is that the real problem is guns in the community, and that, you know, evidently there was a law that was changed recently up at the state capitol that gives kids 14 years and under who use guns of far reduced time. I think it's 48 months is the maximum. And evidently, some of the older folks that are in gangs and use guns are now giving the guns to younger people. And so the real problem is guns on our street. I'm really asking all people in New Haven, if you know someone who has a gun and shouldn't have it, if they're a kid, if they're anywhere, I would say between the ages of 12 to 25, and those guns are not licensed in New Haven, no matter what their age is, if they're not licensed, would you please let us know so we can come and get that gun? We've got to get the guns out of the hands of people because it's the guns that do the damage. You know, teenagers have been fighting since we've had teenagers among human beings. You know, think about all of the plays. West Side Story comes to mind, you know, like was even before I was a teenager. It was about the kind of violence that happens between young adolescents. Well, it wasn't as bad when I was younger because people fought with their fists. When you use a gun, it's a fatal decision that you've made, and you can absolutely change a person's life. You can maim or you can kill them. We've got to get the guns out of the hands of our children.
Mayor Harp, what was this? Do you know what this spat was about? Was it about a girl? Was it about social media? Was it? We don't have any sense that this guy was involved in like bad stuff.
No, he wasn't involved in anything.
14-year-old boy got shot.
Bad, you know, like what I was told was that, you know, like there was some kind of a personal interchange that may have occurred in East Haven, and which is why our police force didn't know about it. And you know, it was just kids getting
mad. Did people come from East Haven to shoot him?
No, they were from another side of the city, and you know, all these kids, for whatever reason, were in East Haven. Don't ask me why. It's kind of unusual.
So this was a spat between people in New Hopeville and kids in another neighborhood?
In another neighborhood. It's all under investigation. But what I want to say to people in New Haven is, please, when you see something, say something to the police. We define for ourselves what our community is going to be like. If we allow these folks with guns, no matter their age, to run roughshod over us, then that is what they're going to do. They're going to terrorize us. But if we let them know, if you come into our neighborhood and we see you doing something, that we are going to let the police know and that we're going to testify against you. We've got to do that.
Now you say it's a tough time in New Hallville. Obviously it's a tough time anytime a 14-year-old boy like Tyreek Keys, who's an amazing dancer. If you go to the Independent, you can watch a video of how he danced. It was really moving.
And, his mother is such a lovely woman, and when she talks about him, she smiles through her tears. That's the kind of young man
he
was.
So it hurts us all as a city whenever a teenager is killed. You said this is tough times for New Hallville. Is it in a broader sense? Because I know the violence rate is so much lower in New Hallville than it was. It wasn't just a one-time thing. We have cut the violence in New Hallville dramatically. It was where we had one of the foci of murders in the city. This is the first one in, I believe, close to a year in New Hallville. And not just murder, shootings are down, although, as we know, there still is gun violence in our city. And you said that the neighbor's hot right now. There was another teenager shot. Was that also in New Hallville?
It was in New Hallville. It was.
So is there something going on with groups of kids? Or?
You know, honestly, the police believe these two are not related, that it has... that the person who was shot in the leg, that person was trying to shoot somebody else. I don't know. It's again, it's one of the things that is under investigation. The problem are guns. You know, you don't solve things with using a gun.
I guess what's hard for me, Mayor Harp, is how do we get perspective? Every time someone's shot, it's horrible and it affects life. There's no question that there are a lot fewer of the shootings than before. There's absolutely no question none. That there are waves. Sometimes two gangs get into beef. I'm not saying that's what this is. So they have a little tit for tat till the police take care of it. I don't want to sound callous at all because I was struck. I felt horrible what happened last week, and we care a lot about it. Do we have a big problem in the city with violence? Do we have? I mean, is New Hartville really hot?
Well, I think that it, the people feel that it's hot. And, you know, I think that we got a little spoiled, maybe that's the wrong word, but, you know, we got used to things being calm and there not being shootings. And so then when one happens and someone's killed, it's even more startling.
Whereas in the past when there were so many,
right,
people stopped taking notice because there were a couple every day.
Right.
So I guess that's a different perspective. It's always interesting for me how we see this perspective. Well, obviously, we care about this. We care about Harry Keyes, and he has his funeral tomorrow. Are you going to the funeral tomorrow?
I'm going to try to go, yeah.
Okay. And so then there was a discussion about whether to put a memorial. Hi, Bob.
Well,
sorry
Bob
about
is
that.
Still there.
Do you have another question for the mayor?
I just had a follow-up question. Mayor, have you met with ministers, street team, the police chief Campbell about the recent shootings?
I've met and spoken, and I'm sure he's tired of speaking to me, with Chief Generoso.
He's the assistant chief in charge of the detective division.
And I have spoken to Chief Campbell as well. As everyone may or may not know, Chief Campbell is away on training. And so Chief Generoso is in charge, and I'm just a text away, and he texts me quite often, and I text him. I'm going to be having meetings with some of our mental health providers today, as well as our street outreach workers, to see if there's something that we can do for the community. I think that we've got to get in there. And people are a lot concerned and upset, and we've got to be able to provide services to them, to the young people that need it. And
So Chief Campbell's away on training. Chief Casanova's away on training in Boston, Assistant Chief. He came back last night for the rally for a few minutes, but he said he's heading back.
Both he and Campbell are in Boston.
And Assistant Chief Reyes has been away at FBI training.
He's in, he's in Virginia at that place.
Quantico,
there we go, that has the TV show.
So really, that's kind of weird. I mean, we have nobody sort of at the house.
We've got Chief Generoso, and he's usually the one who takes Chief Campbell's place, and I have all the confidence in him in the world.
Bob, do you have anything else? Yeah.
Yeah, I just had one last comment, and this goes to a jail term. I just think people in New Hallville are afraid to snitch.
Right, that's an old debate about, and what Mayor Harper is saying, she hopes that people will say something.
I think that's part of the problem, you know. We've had 3 shootings, no arrest. We haven't had arrest in quite a while. So, I mean...
Yeah, are we near an arrest?
We are near an arrest on the
Tyreek?
No, on the one that happened. I think it was on Saturday.
Okay.
So we're near
Okay, Bob, well, thanks so much for calling in to Mayor Monday.
Thank you.
Always great to hear from you, and always great to have you listening to Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio. Mayor Tony Harp is in the house at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. So you're not concerned about so much of the brass being out of town at one time? I mean, that wasn't the greatest planning.
Well, you know, I am a little concerned, but we still have 2 chiefs here. We have Chief Generoso and Chief Kane. So,
right, I forgot we have Chief Kane now. You know, you don't see these guys. You know, you're not usually... You have top cops are talking to the community and giving them updates and expressing things. I guess that's not really their role as much as.
Well, I think that they would do it. You know, I've had some conversations with Chief Generoso, and he feels that the community might not accept from him some of the information. And also, Officer Hartman is the spokesperson normally for the police department.
You know what's so interesting? When this happened with Tyreek Keyes, we had some other discussions going on simultaneously in our community. There, Julian Knox, who's an officer at the police department who works with survivors of shootings and homicides, she brought together a lot of the mothers from the last decade or more, mm-hmm. and they want to put a memorial up to homicide victims. It's funny, when they had this whole discussion, no one pointed out that there is a mini memorial on Harrison Street outside the Westville Branch Library for all the victims of gun violence in New Haven. But they want to do something a little bigger. They want to do it on that plotted land by Edgewood Park where Pendleton Street, Edgewood Avenue, and West Park is. You know, as you're going down there, as you're about to enter into the park on Edgewood.
Okay.
And end up having a little tension between them and the neighbors. They met with the neighborhood park people. Markeisha Ricks, a reporter, was there, did not feel that the neighbors were hostile to the idea of it. They were asking questions like, can we see this, the design, how will it affect it? The mothers had kind of felt like maybe there was resistance because they felt like it wasn't their community that was killed. Although I was pointing out to Markeisha, there was a murder just a bunch within a few blocks of there.
Sure.
I mean, the sundial, the duck pond. I mean, so I don't know if that was that, but... But I, that raised the whole question of how you memorialize gun victims, because we have the unofficial memorials that always go out where people put the teddy bears and the Hennessy bottles and the votive candles and the buttons. What do you think about this memorial idea?
I don't think it's a bad idea. And I think that what people aren't used to is that the Edgewood Park has a real active Friends organization. They do a lot. And so they're going to be concerned about things like design and
right,
placement.
But I know those people, and I could be wrong, but I would doubt they would have any hesitation to this as a concept.
No, I think as long as they feel, you know, what I've learned as mayor is that you really can't tell people what you're going to do. You've got to say, we'd like to do this, and we want your input. That's a better way to handle it.
Yeah, and I think you will. You got Becky Bunbury, your park chief, is on top of this one.
Right.
So I think we'll be able to work it out. These are hard things to talk about.
No, they're hard things to talk about, but, you know, everybody wants their fingerprint on it someplace. And so you give them a place to place their little thumb and, you know. And
I was saying that Edgewood Park is like the people's park. I feel like all of New Haven crosses there.
Yep,
like
I think
so. Like, you think who even lives within a block or two of where that memorial is, you really get all of New Haven up and down that street.
I do.
I love seeing how much people use that park.
Oh, always.
I think it's one of our gems.
It is.
Another way I was thinking about this Tyreek shooting was that people never tie it to politics, but we have a race for probate court. Jack Keyes is retiring because he's reaching his mandatory retirement age of 70 at the probate court as our New Haven probate judge. And that's somebody who deals so intimately with young people in trouble. So you have your programs in the city, the mentorship programs, My Brother's Keeper. You have USTAT, where you're really focusing in on the 100 or 200, I guess, young people most in danger of being shot or shooting somebody, helping them stay in school. Meanwhile, there's this whole other similarly large group of young people who have had horrible things happen in their life, abused by parents, parents die or get shot, taken away because of drugs. And the probate court and the judge there really stays on top of that. And who that probate judge is pretty important when you think about how these people's lives are affected and what ends up happening on the street.
No, I think it's really important. And I think that that's the reason why it's an elected position, because that person has to have a relationship with the people that he or she is making decisions about.
So do you have a candidate? There are three candidates running. Are you endorsing anybody?
I'm not going to endorse anybody right now. I'm just I've been to a lot of the forums because I've had to be there
myself.
That's
right, you're there. But it's interesting, the race that's really the most interesting competitive race appears to be this probate judge race.
And I think that I think we have three really good candidates.
And then how does that work? You know, people always say, should the mayor endorse? I guess you endorsed in Ward 19, right? Elfrieda Edwards' daughter, Kim?
Yeah, I've endorsed Kim. She's the only one, I think, with an opponent. I've also endorsed all of the incumbent alders that are
running.
There
are a few races. Ward 4, Evelyn Rodriguez has a challenger. Rodney Williams is an open seat. He has someone named, I forget his name, is running next to the 19 ward, you know.
Okay.
So that, you know, I was wondering about mayoral endorsements, how much they matter. You're not the kind of person who comes in and says, everybody's got to follow who I want to follow, and I'm going to cut your nose off if you don't, you know, vote for this bill.
Maybe I should.
We're going to get the other side of Tony Harp and unleash her. So does it, and this is not meant as a mean question, does it matter whom you endorse?
I hope it does. I
don't mean it like that. I mean, I guess it's saying like an expression, if you respect Tony Harp, then that's an indication when someone endorses somebody that if you like what she's done and her values, then you like the...
Oh, and I would hope that they would know that would be someone I could work with, and that if they want me to be their mayor, they're going to want to have people I can work with in these positions. So,
Board of Ed, are you going to make an endorsement?
Yeah, I might later. It depends upon how things roll out.
And there's a convention this week, Tuesday night at 6:30 it starts, although your campaign says it starts at 5:30 because you're doing a cookout.
Yeah, we're going to, so come on down.
Career Cookout. High School Democratic Town Committee is going to endorse its candidates. It's going to be the big convention. One thing that always confused me is how we do it backwards from the national party. So that's part is they have primaries, then they have a convention to endorse them. But here we have first the party endorses someone, and then there's a convention, and then there are primaries if they want to run. Do you know why it's done that way or what impact that has?
Well, I think that the way that I always understood it was that the party selects, and then if you're not happy with, and you're a Democrat, with what the party selected, then you can primary. So you're primarying the party's decision.
The Republican Town Committee had a convention last week, a citywide convention, the Bonneville Hall of Records. They had 17 people there. You might think, wow, a convention that gets 17 people
that's
in a city with 30 wards. I had the same impression Tony Harp just had. I said, that's pretty good for them. They're trying so hard to rebuild that. They have a second party. They're outnumbered 25-1
yeah.
in voter registration for Democrats. And that doesn't even count the 14,000 independents they feel they have a shot at. Jonathan Wharton, the new young chairman, who is a professor at Southern Connecticut, he's on City Planning Commission. He's trying so hard. I watched with every one of those 70 people in the room. He had personally recruited a whole bunch of them, young people who haven't been involved in stuff, but including the older people. He has one by one found a way to get them involved and then ran the radio. He's trying to make them feel special about something. Like there was one guy who shows up at Community Imagine Meeting. He says, you love the arts. You're going to be our person to be the Republican on the Arts Commission if, you know, the mayor says yes. And hey, you know, you really love this other guy. You really are doing such a good job with our Facebook page. People weren't coming on our Facebook page. You were. And I saw him trying to identify something they could each do so he could try to build the party from the bottom up. And at the same time, he loses people. Like he had a young guy who was here who was going to be his big recruiter, and then he got a job. He got a position at a law school. Any thoughts on the Republican Party? Are you rooting for them, even though you're not a Republican, to build up? Do we need them?
Well, you know, I think that if there are other views about how things should be done that are in line with the Republican Party, they should have a mechanism to express those views.
Like, do we have enough competition within the factions of the Democratic Party? Is that the real two parties? Or do we need a third party that's not a Republican Party? Do we need a strong competition? You've always said to me you feel like you and others have done better, even if people haven't been nice about the way they've opposed you, that it keeps you on your toes and brings up points you might not have thought of.
No, I think it's always good to hear a dissenting point of view and a different point of view because it expands you and it expands your perspective. You know, you can't possibly, if you look at some things and everybody looks at everything the same way, and say you have a problem and you're always trying to solve the problem the same way and everybody's looking at it the same way, but the problem never gets solved, maybe you do need another pair of eyes that sees things differently.
And we do have some eyes on our Facebook page, New Haven Independent Facebook page, writing in some questions for Mayor Harp. We're going to get to those right now. You're listening to Mayor Monday on New Haven Independent Radio, WNHH Radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. This is a really interesting question. It refers to two stories we had in The Independent last week. Aaron Good asked, does Mayor Harp think the zoning ordinance should be changed to permit micro-apartments of 300 square feet or less? Now, there were two stories about this that were very different last week. There's a guy who's rebuilding a house, a historic house, that almost, like, house almost all becomes a historic house in New Haven when we talk about it. It's like anyway, so it's on Dwight Street near Park. I mean, not in a park, near, on Chapel Street near Dwight. And he wants to make it a luxury bunch of apartments and squeeze in all these 300 square feet units and then have other room used for rooftop deck, a fitness center, a cinema. The city plan department doesn't like this idea. They worry that it's squeezing too much in and it's kind of greedy and not safe and too dense. On the other hand, there's this guy, Pasquale Cassano, lives on Nickel Street, and he has a 67-year-old aunt in Italy. He wants to move back here. He has a home. He has a little unit upstairs that's less than 1,000 square feet that the ordinance says it needs to be. He wanted it to make it smaller so he could come because he wasn't able to afford to pay a rent for like a 1,000-square-foot apartment. And they said no because that wasn't a hardship under the law. So there's this interesting question about how dense do we want to be. I know your economic development department believes deeply in density in general. Mm-hmm. We want to fill in our spaces and more people living in the city and that makes it a more vibrant city and supports all sorts of ancillary activity that we want, like commerce and office and entertainment. What's your feeling? Aaron Good is asking, do you think we should have these 300-square-foot apartments?
You know, I don't think it's really going to be big enough, and I think that I think we our first concern has to be safety. And so I would say, you know, and I've seen all this sort of micro housing. I think it in years to come, we're going to see a lot of it blighted.
I see what you're saying.
That's a concern that I have.
And it's interesting because it's different in every context. That's why I love these kind of issues. Because in New Hallville, there's been this idea, your Livable City Initiative and the one before, both felt that on some of the vacant lots, why not make some micro houses where people can afford to buy their own house? They're not talking about 300 square feet, but they might be talking about 100,000. Not sure. These really tiny houses that people could own on these half, on these sliver lots. Again, that's a different reason. I don't know what your feeling on that one is.
Well, you know, I want to see the design. I want to see how people store things. I mean, think about, I just don't think it's, people have got to have enough room to live, and we've got to be reasonable about it. And I think we've got to be careful when we think about, we can make things smaller when the rest of the world's getting bigger.
You know, in New York, people will pay to live in a closet if they... Maybe we don't want to go there.
No, I don't think we need to go there, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think we're that... I think we could have density without 300 square foot apartments.
I think so, too.
Tom Breen wrote in a question, has City Hall heard from Alberta Witherspoon about whether she or not she is stepping down from her position early as Ward 7 Alder, and if Lucas Moe will be the interim Alder? And that was kind of fun. I was calling up your spokesperson, author, Lawrence, last week, and I was calling the city clerk department. They had a Ward 7 Democratic Town Committee meeting, Town Ward Committee. And they announced at that meeting, she stepped down. And then they announced that this other guy, this Yale Union Alder, Yale Union Local 33 guy named Lucas Moe, was going to be the new Alder to serve out the term but not run for re-election. And then Abby Roth will get the nomination to come back as Alder. She was originally going to be running against Alberta unchallenged. But none of that was in any public record I could find.
Because she hasn't written a letter of resignation yet.
Okay. Is that
correct? But I think she announced that she was resigning, I think, even on the floor of the board. I think we'll make sure that she knows that she has to put it in writing.
And then have you chosen the successor? Were they right to announce that?
Well, you know, I want to get her letter first, but, you know, I've made a commitment to her. She knows what it is.
To her.
But
what about this other guy who wants to be the interim Alder?
Well, you know, she's the one who's making a recommendation. I'm going to listen to the.
Oh, you're going to let her decide who to? I see. And I said this guy worked with her and done work for the committee.
Yeah. So if that's who she wants, as soon as she resigns, we can take care of that.
Okay. And we're taking care of a lot of computer coding in New Haven.
Yeah.
And a lot of tech stuff. This has sort of been a tech week for you, Mayor Harp. You announced new free Wi-Fi on the green.
Yeah.
As you said, part of your effort to cut the digital divide. And today you are starting a Microsoft DigiCamp of coding. Was that at City Hall? Where is that?
Yes, they were in the Board of Alders meeting room. And so, yeah.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So we're making use of that space when people aren't making speeches.
Right.
So what's going on in there?
So they're going to learn to code. They're going to learn to make apps. I guess you do that when you code. So they're going to be there for 3 days, and they're going to learn how to... enhance their knowledge of IT so that it will help them when they go back to school.
I love talking to these kids about how they built an app, how they've done coding. And even though I use computers, I think in our generation it's a little hard for us to understand. I can't imagine building an app.
Well,
I don't even know how to start. I know how to click on a Washington Post app, but I mean, is this something that is even tangible to you in your mind?
No. And I said to them today, I'm really jealous because I'd love to learn.
It's so cool. And Leap does that too. They do a coding camp. I was talking to one kid yesterday who's been in coding camp this summer. I said, what'd you do? He said, I built an app. I built a little robot. I built a computer. They go, wow, that's kind of wild, fun stuff.
It is fun. It's, you know, they're having so much more fun than we are.
And you also had a third thing with Teals and STEM. What was that all about?
With Teals and STEM?
Does this ring a bell?
Oh, yeah.
Science, technology, engineering, and math education.
Oh, you know.
I was told to ask you about that.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. One of the things that we're going to be doing is the Microsoft Academy, and that's going to be at Coogan Pavilion.
And what's that?
That's actually in the park that we were talking about. Oh, you know where Coogan is, right?
And that's so, right off, and so right off Whaley Avenue as you're getting into Westville Village in the park, right, the skating rink used to be.
So we're going to have a 3D printer, which is another thing that is...
Another thing that I can't get my mind around. Guns come out. And you're going to get dinner eventually, like a souffle.
And yeah. And so after school, kids are going to be able to go there throughout the year to learn to code and to have access to this various equipment that they can use to build things.
So this isn't just the summer.
It's not just the summer.
So school year, you're going to have coding after school program at Coogan Pavilion.
Right. It's one of the ways in which we are trying to eliminate the digital divide.
That sounds really neat.
And you know, we're going to be rolling out more and more things. We're looking at whether or not we can put Wi-Fi in other parks that are close to more dense areas, as you mentioned, density, and areas that tend to not have access to the internet. To the internet. There we go. Thank you.
I've heard of that thing. Yeah, the younger people are totally into it.
Yeah. And so, that internet thing. And so they'll be able to go up on a public Wi-Fi to do homework. I think it's really important that kids have access to this.
We're also working in New Haven to be a more bike-friendly city, even though we have, I think we won the ranking for bike-friendliest city in New England.
Okay.
Although I don't always feel that way if I'm on a bike. It was mad at me for being in the street, but you know. One thing we're doing is building a new 2-mile cycle track. We got the state money for it, $1.2 million. We spent months going over plans with neighborhoods. We watched one of the more remarkable I've seen successes in city planners working with a few neighbors who were against the majority, didn't want the cycle track because that was going to affect parking. They found this creative way to move it onto the sidewalk and off so they wouldn't lose these parking spaces they were worried about. So things ready to go for approval. It was at the police commission and it got stopped because there are still final details and they feel that not everybody's on board yet. They're worried most specifically about, and this would go from Forest Road to Park Street all the way down to Edgewood. They're worried most of all that Amistad Academy, there are a lot of buses backed up there in the morning. They worry that when it goes to one lane, how are people going to get around? Some people have written and said, come on, this is 5 minutes. Yeah. And Amistad can figure it out. And yeah, and people, what's interesting is they some of the people who opposed it portrayed as like the yuppies from the privileged areas want to bike through. But when I went to one of the public meetings, it was actually people who live right near Troop School who are concerned that there's too much fast driving. And their kids aren't safe when they cross the street. So they were all for this thing, for slowing it down. But do you have any updates on this? We're on the status of that.
You know, I really don't know the status. I'll try to look into it.
Well, the status is that it's gotten approvals. Now it's waiting for an approval for the police commission. And right. Then it goes to the Board of Alders. All the Alders have come out for it in principle. Just that there's always the last details on each of these. And they want to be able to understand the last details. The City Planning Commission approved it. But like Yvette Hamilton was saying, I'm all for it. She's an Edgewood Alder. Let me see the final details because there are a few streets that people want to know about. I want to be able to explain it to people, but they're down with the concept.
Well, I think it's a good concept.
All right. And there's the concept for what's happening at Science Park. There's a corner of the park that has had nothing happening on it. Big parts certainly has nothing happening on it since we had a Winchester rifle factory that once employed 18,000 people around the clock. Mm-hmm. That over the years withered down to 1,000 to closing, and parts of the park was reborn as Science Park and there's not activity there, but parts of it, nothing's happening. There's an empty part on Munson Street that's kind of polluted that a company's coming in and wants to clean up. And we found out last week that they want to build over close to 400 apartments on that area as well as, and that's right where the crossroad is with Munson and Henry and anything. Any thoughts on that project?
No, I think it's a good thing. It's been empty and desolate looking for many years, so I'm really glad that they're going to build.
They just got approval to move 26,000 cubic yards of soil.
That's a lot.
They said they need a clean soil, and Yale happened to have it around at some other project. They're going to move it. That's the kind of like mechanics of everyday life that when we're up in the clouds with our philosophical discussions, it's a very different way of looking at what happens in the city day to day.
I bet you got the clean soil from a golf course, right? No, just.
Yeah. Have you read about the WPCA, Water Pollution Control Authority? They love to go after people's houses. So they have these debts, some of which are gone years, and they have filed 158 foreclosure cases in the last 12 months against New Haven homeowners. The debts have been as low as $2,200. We had a story about this a week ago, because 10 years ago we wrote about this. Other places like the hospitals, especially the Water Authority, they wait until a debt is so big that they might do one or two foreclosures in a whole year. What they do is they put a lien on a house so that when the house is sold, they'll get their money back. WPCA will have these lawyers who make their money by filing the cases. They file these cases, and they told us, well, we don't actually take the houses. Ended up not being true. What they do is they had a foreclosure sale where they didn't buy it, but they forced the foreclosure sale so they could be paid back. Most of the times they do settle with the people or their lender, but in the meantime have added thousands upon thousands of dollars of debt on people who are already struggling to keep their homes. And we interviewed some of these people who had health problems. I was just wondering, you don't run that agency anymore. That got privatized under the Steffo administration to get 1 year of one-time revenue to balance the budget. Any thoughts about this? Anything that can be done?
Well, you know, I think that I need to sit down with my LCI people to see if there's something that we can do about that. I also appoint some of the members of that commission.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. That's right, Clay Williams.
He's
Al Paolillo is the alder. He gets paid to go to those meetings. Who's on that commission? He has not spoken about this for, we asked about it,
so
for
I'm
about 10 years.
Sit with them and see if there's anything that we can do. But if it's low amounts like that,
in some cases the legal fees are three times the debt. Like the Marcus Law Firm came in $7,000 bill on this woman who owned a few thousand bucks.
Interesting.
Now, people say, well, about the WPCA, say, like, we don't turn off their service. Other places might turn off their water, electricity. We're trying to be the good guys. Some of these debts, even though they're small, have been gone on for 5 or 10 years. The people we talked to said they never communicate with us. They don't even know. We didn't even know this was going on. Now, sometimes when people are in financial trouble, they don't pay attention to all the notices they get.
No, they
send notices.
It's a
complicated situation. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they send notices.
And the other thing that's happened cleaning up the city is you've sent 11 youth ambassadors in New Hoyleville to clean up the neighborhood. And that's always interesting to watch because LCI, your neighborhood's agency, gives each neighborhood $10,000 to spend however they want every year. That's sort of democratic.
Well, it's actually the mayor and the board of alders that do that through LCI. Thank you very much.
Doesn't LCI work for you, though?
Well, sort of.
Okay. Well, anyway, the LCI specialist goes to neighborhoods and they decide how to do it. It's very interesting neighborhood-based budgeting.
Yep.
And what the neighborhoods seem to be like doing is hiring kids for the summer to clean up the neighborhood, and it gives the kids a new sense of investment in their neighborhoods.
I think that's really great. You know, we thought that since we have the management teams, if they had a little bit of resource that, and here's where LCI, they help to administer it, but they also have other monies that they have, and they can actually match the money sometimes, depending upon the neighborhood. So it's really great that it goes through that agency. And every neighborhood does something a little different. I think this is important. We also have Aspirations. It's an after-school program. We had some kids that are going to be developing signs for us for no littering. Because I noticed, and I think most people don't notice what you don't have, but we don't have no littering signs here in New Haven. It was brought to my attention at Ward 25's ward committee meeting that we don't have those signs. And so we're going to see what we can do about that as well. So now I think it's important for kids to think about that, think about the signs, and also to help keep the neighborhoods clean.
All right. Well, democracy in action is not a dirty word in New Haven. And we're in our parks every week with the Cool Breeze Festival starting Gulf Street Park. Big hit last week with Chub Rock. And you wear the green with stylistic Saturday night. What was that like?
Oh, it was a lot of fun.
I'm hearing raves and raves on that one.
Well, it was my generation, so I loved it.
Mine too. I remember buying the single of Betcha Guy Golly Wow at Corvettes. tell me, what was the best part of the night?
I think it just felt good to be out there. Everybody was loving the music. And it's all these old love songs. So it just, there was this wonderful vibe out there.
As Babs Rose Ivy said, it's back then. They sang nice things about us, meaning women. Those songs. She said they also looked really good. They were dancing well.
They did.
They had their game. Sheila E. This Saturday night, you heading to that?
Yes, I'm going to be there. So come on down to the green.
All right.
And you can actually go live using our free Wi-Fi.
That's right. You can put it on Facebook Live, just like this shows on Facebook Live. Well, thank you so much, Mayor Hart, for coming in. It's always such a treat every Monday to start our week together and hear what's going on in New Haven.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for joining us today on Mayor Monday and Dateline New Haven. Thanks to Birch and Moses and Devlin PC and Gateway Community College for providing support for today's show. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.